I'll come back to what Jesse had started with. This talk is a little bit more about phenotyping, and there's a little bit of genetics in this. The motivation for this title, Vikas, comes from the discussion we had about, Vikas was wondering about whether I would be interested in talking about some of the things that we are doing at Iowa State and some of the future perspective for some of the younger member of the audience and for grad students. So this is a particular project that is currently funded by the internal grant, seed grant, from the ISU Presidential Initiative for Interdisciplinary Research. And the title is Data-Driven Discoveries for Agriculture Innovations. The theme for that interdisciplinary research initiative was data-driven sciences. So I'm going to build from that and then go into the kinds of things that we have done and where we are attempting to go in the future. I'd start by acknowledging three members of the collaborative team that I've worked with in the last few years. And do I have a pointer here, I guess? That's fine, I'll just use the cursor. So these two gentlemen, this is Dr. Bhaskar and Dr. Shamik. They're in mechanical engineering at Iowa State. Dr. Bhaskar is an image processing expert and also a computational scientist. Shamik Sakai is an applied machine learning specialist at Iowa State. And this is Dr. R.D. Singh, who's in faculty in the Department of Agronomy with interest in diseases and genetics. The work that I'm presenting is in partnership with these colleagues of mine. And what we have been able to put together, at least in this collaborative initiative, is matching of people and expertise. And how we have attempted to do that is that on this left-hand side are graduate students and postdocs from my group and Artie's group, and they're matched with these folks from the engineering and computer science. And these are some of the examples of their projects. And I think this is something that has led to the kinds of outcomes that we have had, where these students, these young brilliant minds, they come together from these diverse disciplines and they help formulate the problem, they come up with methodologies, they're taking courses together. These are some of the project outcomes is a reflection of the kinds of things that can be done when we build this team of diverse disciplines and interests. There are some other exciting things that are happening at Iowa State currently. There is a program, NSF-funded NRT, which is in predictive plant phenomics. In predictive plant phenomics, where incoming PhD students, they take different courses as a cohort in plant sciences and data sciences and engineering. So you can imagine, for those of us in the room in plant sciences, imagine taking those 500, 600 level engineering courses, you get in. And what's fascinating is that these students are doing very well. They come together. They come together and they're taking these courses and doing very well. There's also an initiative at the Plant Science Institute on campus. And in that institute, the faculty members, there is a cohort of these fellows, and they come together from engineering and plant science to come up with new innovative ideas to tackle. So there are lots of things that are happening. This is a specific approach that we have taken in this group. The D3AI project, that, as I mentioned, it really is a seed money to get together diverse disciplines. So these are more than 25 different faculty members across campus from very wide subject areas, economics, business, plant science, engineering. And they've come together to come up and formulate different problem areas. And these are some of the problem areas that I've put together in three different scales to have transformative innovations. And this is a scale that is led by Dr. Carolyn Lawrence Dill at Iowa State. And in this one of the problem areas is that we have these genome browsers. What we lack is when we look at the genomic information, we do not have the phenotype associated in the genome browser. So she's looking at, at this scale. This is the scale that I'm leading on with the phenotyping, and I'm gonna talk about some of the work that we are doing here. And this is a scale, it's more wider. This is a county or a state level for yield prediction using some advanced data analytics, and this is led by Dr. Bhaskar, whom I showed earlier. So we had this, these transformations that are happening, but not too long ago, this is just 5 years ago, when I was still in the wheat world in Canada, for those members in the audience, I don't expect you will be able to read all of this, but members in the audience that have plant breeding programs or doing these, making these kinds of selections, it's not atypical to see you have checks and lines, experimental lines, and you have a lot of different trait data. And you have to make selections, and those selections will have to be made where the data is collected, and I hope you can see the difference in color code. These are visual, these are manual. So a lot of these traits, they were, information was, you know, derived visually. And visual assessment, it has inherent biases. It's very subjective. There's a lot of variability associated with those measurements. And those variabilities are variabilities that we need to remove. So when we are making selections, we need to be able to make right selections, because what we discard, we would never know if it actually was good. We have discarded it. We just keep and we test what we have kept. So that's one aspect, that how do we reduce the variability that comes from these measurements that are done manually or visually. The other aspect is, we have large population numbers. You talked about that, Jesse. There's a need for automation. We need to be able to generate information in a timely manner at a scale that is workable, that we can handle large population size, and we have removed those variabilities or biases. And the final point here is that there are certain traits that are just difficult to phenotype, or 5 years ago, and we just say, well, they're not really important, you know. If we can get the combine yield, what does it really matter? You know, I get that end product, right? I used to say that too. But what has changed now? What has changed now is we have different platforms at the ground level, at the aerial level, and you've shown this, you know, Jesse, in your talk. So this is an aerial image. You can get a lot of information with these, you know, simple sensors, multispectral cameras that you can fly around. You can do it on the ground level, and you can generate information on different diseases. You can get information on, you know, plant height, maturity, canopy architecture. In the past, some of these morphometric traits were a little more difficult because, you know, it's very difficult to get the canopy shape and the evolution of it. But now we're getting in an age where these traits are becoming, you know, possible to look at. So the approach with that in mind, the approach we have taken in our breeding effort at Iowa State is we have these, you know, large collection of individuals, soybean genotypes. We are phenotyping across time and environments, and we have different, you know, time scale, so temporal scale, spatial scale across environment, and we can get information on a lot of different traits. As we have, you know, as we get information on a lot of different traits at different organization level, all the way from plants to canopies and even microscopic level, we are starting to form this phenomic cube. And as you form this phenomic cube, you're generating a lot of information. We're going to get a lot of volume of data that's coming in, and that data, they're coming in, you know, lots of different shape. There are different types of information that's coming in, and they will come at a, you know, rapid pace, because these automated systems, you're going to get a lot of information, but we have to be very careful about the trustworthiness of all of this information that we are generating. And once we get these four V's, the final V comes in, which is the value. So we have collected a lot of information, and it's very cool to fly those drones. The first year I did it, I was so happy. You know, I put it in my first presentation, first chance that I could. And then came the realization, okay, so what do I do with this now, you know? And there are lots of those aspects that one has to think about as we get, you know, these V's. What is that value? How are we going to utilize it? We're utilizing it to get into some of the genomic studies, to learn about different genes for the more discovery-based, also learn some of the mechanisms. And as we get into the mechanisms, and we have identified some of the targets that we are interested in at different scales, we can get into the crop improvement. But more importantly, all of the information that's coming from this scale is the information that goes in feeding in into the crop improvement. So as we think of the genomic assisted breeding, I think we also have to start thinking of phenomic assisted breeding. And phenomic assisted breeding, as I indicated, it's not just the way we did things in the past, it's the kind of data that is coming and how are we utilizing that to make selections. I'm going to give some, and this is something I can do, Jesse, that you can, some published papers. We can talk about things in public domain. So these are sort of two companion papers. This is Marcus Knife. He graduated from mechanical engineering. He's the lead author of this paper in Plant Methods. This is Dr. Chaoping Zhang, who's a postdoctoral fellow in my group, who led this paper in Scientific Reports that was published. The motivation for this was, we need to be able to assess a lot of different genotypes. So we need automation. We need to be able to remove the variability, the biases. So we need to come up with advanced data analytics, utilization of machine learning, to be able to extract features and remove those biases as the phenotype that can then be deployed in genomic studies. So this is an example of some of the features for IDC. This is abiotic stress in soybean. With ML approach, hierarchical classification, we can get scores for IDC. So this is a score that breeders would generally use. But in addition to scores, we can actually get severity on a scale of 1 to 100. So we are not just limited to five classes. We can actually find, get finer scale. So we utilize machine learning. We could get machine learning driven scores as well as severity. And another aspect in this paper that we present is a smartphone app. One of the things that we deal with is experts can rate, but experts can rate only for so long before they call for their meetings and other things. So we have to be able to get folks that can do the rating without any biases. So the smartphone app, you can take a picture and in real time it gives you your score and severity. But what we did was for the genomic study, we utilized those machine learning driven scores and severity for performing a genome-wide association, which led us to identify genomic regions that we do miss when we just utilize the visual scores. So when we get this ML-driven severity, we are able to identify genomic regions with candidate genes, with iron homeostasis, then we can understand the genetics, the genetic architecture. Another example, which is something that I'm very interested in, I said with the phenomic assisted, is when we utilize the genomic assisted genomic prediction along with some of the phenotypic features, our prediction accuracy is improved. And in soybean breeding, at some stage we get into that single row. At some stage we pick that plant and we get to that row. I'm interested in extracting information from that single row that perhaps can be missed by just genome-wide prediction. So that's where the motivation comes. This paper was another paper that came out in Frontiers, and this is Dr. Zaki from Mechanical Engineering. And this is John, who's the second author here. He's a PhD student of mine. He was involved in this work as one of the NRT students, so he did rotation in my lab as well as Mechanical Engineering and in Data Science in Iowa State. So this is one of the projects that he was involved in. And the motivation of this project comes from a couple of other PhD students, Race and Kyle in my group, have interest in coming up with predictors of yield. And so they're looking at a lot of different traits, and their interest, one of the interests is the canopy. And canopy shape, we talked about, it's difficult to quantify. And if we are going to learn about the time series of the shape evolution in the growth cycle, we're going to collect a lot of data. And that's just one example. When we go and we collect just regular data. So in this particular approach, our motivation is, can we reduce, can we get that data size to be reduced so that it is manageable? And what we did is, this is an example in the paper. This is a canopy of a particular genotype which comes from a lot of diverse accessions, more than 400. We can get the outline of that canopy. Then we can subsequently chain code, and then we can get the shape parameters using Fourier descriptors. And you can go from a 15 MB image to 5 KB. And then you can go back and project it back, and you can see for four different shape parameters that we looked at, we have a very high correlation of the original image with the reduced dimensionality that we had with these descriptors. So as we go through the canopy evolution, we can, you know, store a lot of data, and we know which data is useful, plus we have, you know, less amount of data, and there are some results that we could ask some of the, you know, have the itch of the scientific curiosity. We could look at the diversity for canopy, and again, this feeds in into the interest that how do we build that next generation of soybean cultivars. I'll change the scales a little bit now. I've talked about plants and canopies. This is a scale at a microscope level. This is the work that we did in collaboration with Dr. Tilka, who's a nematologist at Iowa State. This is the main author, Doughton, who's a PhD student in engineering. Imagine you have to look under this microscope and identify this feature in this slide. And if you have to do it for about 3 or 4 months in a year, that's the motivation. This is a problem because as we get soil samples, in order for us to determine the soybean cyst nematode, we have to look at under the microscope and count the number of eggs. So in this particular example, using deep learning, we could look at this is the slide that you would see under the microscope. For, I don't know if you can see from in the back, but these are the ground truth of the eggs, egg count. And the deep learning algorithm was able to detect the same egg counts. But it detected an additional egg. Two things. A, humans actually made an error and they missed the egg. B, that actually the egg, you know, it was opening up, so the algorithm is not picking it. So this is an example of the need for that automation for certain traits and where this advanced data analytics come into the picture to help solve. As we are trying to breed, we can work with, you know, more population sizes because we can get the information. This one is co-authors here are Sam, who's a PhD student in Shamik's group. This is David, PhD student in RD's group. And in this particular research example, there are different stresses, in both biotic and abiotic. And I don't expect you to be able to read, but these are 8 different stresses. And the motivation here is, can these advanced data analytics, can we identify artificial intelligence, can we identify which disease or stress it is, can we classify it as a breeding person, I'm interested in R, MR, MS, S, and can we also quantify it, can we get it to that finer scale of 0 to 100. So those are the 3 motivations to use deep learning. And in this example of potassium deficiency, those of you who have seen this before, you have this chlorosis that's happening on the edges. This is the original image. Expert Rader has marked this to show where they saw visually. And this is the deep learning algorithm output that is showing us that, you know, what did it see? Now, deep learning is a black box. It goes through neural nets, and it you have the data, and you have the labels, and it gives you, you know, the outcome. What we were interested in was, can we not have this black box and have a little more interpretive, so we know exactly what, you know, deep learning, which features was it, utilizing in coming up with this. So we use GradCam, which allows us to look specifically at which areas, which pixels were being utilized in that deep net to come up, and then we can see, and we are more comfortable because familiarity gives us comfort. Now we know that, okay, it does a very, you know, decent job in identification, classification, prediction, but it is something that we would also do. It matches with, you know, what we did. The application, you can just think, you know, you can deploy this platform, you know, in, you know, different kinds of robotic systems. A few years ago, those of you who had a chat with me 5 years ago and you know, we talked about root, I'd probably say there's no way, you know, I would work in roots. As grad students, we used to make fun of our colleagues who used to work on roots. It's a very difficult trait to work with. Now, I'm fascinated by this. It's something that, you know, I just feel very excited about it. And a lot of this has happened because of advances in imaging technologies as well as the data analytics. What can be done in roots could not be done just a few years ago. This is an example where you can see the diversity that exist. I hope you can see it in the back, of different genotypes. So we're looking at hundreds of different genotypes. We're interested in understanding the root characteristics and then relating it to above ground traits. I'm going to try and, so I've presented some of the things that either are published or are in press. I'm going to talk about where we are going from, you know, from where we are. So what has been done has been done. Where are we going next? So this is an Internet of Things, a smart farm, a network farm. And what happens in a smart farm or network farm is we have internet and information connectivity that is going on with, you know, different instruments, different equipment. We have these sensors, and then we have these aerial platforms. We have a data analytics pipeline that provides information to the farmer to be able to make decisions on the farm. So we were motivated by this, and we wanted to utilize this platform in a plant breeding context. How do we do it? Or why should we do it? So in phenotyping, there is a trade-off between quality and quantity for that, you know, for sensing. Either we can phenotype a lot of genotypes, but have less resolution, or we can phenotype a few genotypes, but a very high resolution. So this creates, you know, that disbalance, and how do we overcome this? So that led us to, we applied for an NSF USDA funding that was awarded, and the interest there is to be able to come up with approaches that allows us to break that trade-off, that we can collect the information, and how we do it is we get opportunistic sensing, intelligent path planning, task partitioning and allocation, and generating a spatial-temporal importance map that gets, you know, these ground robots. So think of these ground robots, which is an example here. These ground robots to go and work autonomously in a network hierarchical manner. They can get information and they communicate with in themselves to navigate as well as sense. It gets us the information. The second aspect of this is we have these information, so this can collect a lot of data. And we have sensors, we have, you know, so the programs I showed, they're built in this. So we can get a lot of information that can be collected as we go on. But we get data deluge. And how do we deal with that data deluge? Currently, the algorithms are not set to assimilate this heterogeneous data that is coming from different streams. So we need to come up with ways that allows us to assimilate this data, then to compress it, and then be able to utilize this. So we got a funding project funded through USDA and NSF, where we are attempting to do those things. And both of these projects, they intersect with machine learning, with image technology, plant breeding, plant sciences, optimization, with the intent that we can intelligently collect information to help us in the breeding program. This is the example of that heterogeneous scales, that ground robots, these aerial drones, these planes, and these satellites. How do we get the multispectral and the hyperspectral of different types and different sensors? Because data stream is very different. How can we get information in that one channel to be utilized? This is what has happened in the past. This is what that breeder or farmer is with the data deluge. There's a lot of sensors in the market. Which sensor to use, when, where, and why? And I think what's going to happen in the future is we're going to get insights like we had never before. We'll be able to make decisions and make selections in a plant breeding context that we never had the ability to do before. I'm going to finish with this slide where data remains the currency for plant breeders, whether it's genomic or it's phenomic. And plant breeding is evolving, as you said, Jesse. It's going to fuse a lot of these disciplines. No one is expected to be an expert in all of them. I think plant breeders should remain experts in plant breeding, but they have the knowledge to be able to work closely with these diverse disciplines, you know, to come up with the methodologies and the approaches as we see to move in the foreseeable future. I would like to thank the funding agencies that have funded my program. I would especially thank Monsanto Chia and Soybean Breeding that gave the money for me to do these crazy, pursue these crazy ideas as a breeder. And also Iowa Soybean Association that funds the breeding program, and USDA, NSF, those two projects that I presented. and other funding agencies that have allowed me to do this work along with my colleagues. Thank you.